from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I think that just about everyone would admit that the big story around Georgia football going into this summer and into this fall and what's going to happen in 2018, the major source of curiosity, both I think to a certain degree inside Dog Nation and maybe even outside the bubble here a bit as well, is what's going to happen with these two quarterbacks. Justin Fields, the incoming five-star freshman, the incoming starter Jake Fromm, another former elite recruit who had a dazzling freshman season. Can these two guys be on the same roster together? Can they both be happy? Is one guy destined to get mad and leave, especially in this sort of current age in which we live in, where that kind of stuff seems to be happening with regularity? It just happened with Jacob Eason, who came into Georgia as the Gatorade Player of the Year. You can't arrive with more steam than Eason came into Athens with, and yet just as quickly as it begins, it sort of ends for him after the injury and after he moves on. We had the other day Mitch Light, the managing editor of Athlon Sports, on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, and he was talking about why they made such a big deal of Justin Fields in their College Football Preview magazine. And he said, really, it's their role as a national publication to tell people around the country what everybody's going to be talking about, the few sentences that everyone's going to be saying about, you know, the various schools in contention here in 2018. And for Georgia, he acknowledges there's just going to be a lot of talk about Justin Fields and Jake Fromm. And what Kirby Smart admitted when he spoke at the SEC spring meetings this week, now, part of this is motivated by Stetson Bennett, who announced his plans to a transfer. But for a lot of other people, it's the potential foreshadowing of what could go on between Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. Kirby Smart acknowledged that, you know, in this day and age, in these modern times, the notion of keeping quarterbacks happy and keeping everybody in the fold, that this is the kind of thing that's just not easy to do. And for him, it starts at the high school level. Here is Kirby Smart with a really interesting description of his thought process when it comes with managing and dealing with crowded quarterback rooms.
These young high school quarterbacks, a lot of them are doing the same thing in high school. They're positioning from eighth grade to ninth grade. Where can I be the quarterback in the ninth grade at this high school program? And when they just go shopping and searching, they find a place they can go. And a lot of them start for 3 and 4 years, where it used to didn't be that way. So now it's kind of trickling up to us. So you're sitting there with kids saying, all right, I'm going to go there. You don't see the guy that, I use Hudson Mason as an example. I mean, he was a guy that kept getting better and grew as a quarterback. It's just not a lot of that. But I would argue that if you're a parent of a quarterback, that you would say, you know what? Where's my son going to get the best development? Like, where's he going to get the best reps, learn to play a quarterback position like it is in the NFL? Not necessarily play first, but where's he going to learn how to play the position and sit in a meeting room where they teach you protections and the things you got to learn to play at the next level? Because they don't draft you at the next level just based on your play performance. They want to see what system you played in. How did you play? Did you grow as a quarterback? Have you learned? It's tough. It's tough keeping them around because they all are used to going where they can play that way.
I mean, listen, I think that's a really interesting audio clip from Kirby Smart there. Once again, it comes from the SEC spring meetings. We're going to have Mike Griffith a little bit later on, who's there in the room with Kirby when he spoke that earlier this week. He's going to give us sort of a breakdown of everything that happened this week with the SEC spring meetings. But that quote in particular from Smart, I find to be pretty fascinating. And I guess, to use a journalistic phrase here, the pull quote from that's going to end up being, you know, something along the lines of, it's tough keeping him around. It's tough keeping around. You just saw Jacob Eason transfer. He doesn't say this, but we could have acknowledge that. We did that off the top of the show. Stetson Bennett, who Kirby Smart will get into in a moment, tough keeping around, but also the potential thought of how tough it is to keep a Jake Fromm around and a Justin Fields around. For the ultimate loser, so to speak, of this quarterback competition, it seems like Kirby Smart would acknowledge that it's tough to keep a second-string quarterback happy and keep him plugged in and keep him in the fold. And as Kirby Smart explains, some of that starts from high school. But the other thing that you hear from Kirby, and I think this is really interesting, is that what Kirby Smart is selling to a lot of these quarterbacks, both currently on the roster and for the class of 2019 and 2020 and 2021 and beyond, is not necessarily, hey, come here and play, but come here and learn. And I think that Kirby Smart, while this is obviously, you know, a sales pitch tailored for his program, what he's saying there, I don't necessarily think is wrong. That when it comes to the NFL, and we see the NFL, you know, draft guys all the time that don't necessarily have the most dazzling stats or don't necessarily even in some cases have all that much playing time. They just see the makings of a good quarterback. And you can go to one of these Big 12 style spread offenses and put up a bunch of numbers, but NFL teams have shown you before that sometimes they're not that impressed by that. You can throw a million balls, but if you haven't done so in an offense that mirrors what the NFL may do, the NFL is going to be skeptical of you. And what Kirby Smart, I think, is saying in a roundabout way there is, come here, even if you're not the starter for all 4 years, the NFL is going to be less skeptical of you when your career is done because of the teaching and training you've gotten at the University of Georgia and because the competition you've had to withstand to get on the football field at all. And I do think that's a potentially effective sales pitch from Kirby Smart. I think it's kind of interesting he's that candid about how he kind of goes into this process when it comes to having a quarterback position that's just as deep as all the other position groups that Kirby Smart's trying to build at UGA. But then Kirby goes on to talk about this some more. This notion of keeping quarterbacks happy, this is not just the elite players. This isn't just the Jacob Eason, Jake Fromm, Justin Fields. This is really any quarterback that you might bring in. You got to work to try to keep them happy here, or you got to hope that they stay happy, even for a scout team quarterback that makes a name for himself. Here is Kirby on the situation as it relates to Stetson Bennett.
I don't think that's true for elite quarterbacks. I think that's true for any quarterback. I mean, you know what we're going through with Stetson, and everybody, we want to keep Stetson there with us. You can't say that he was coming out of high school, was that, and he's looking for an opportunity to play. And you got to do the math. I don't know. Y'all tell me how many Division I schools are out there. 130. So if you're at 130, there's way more quarterbacks than that. And you would like to have, everybody would like to have three deep. So that's, how many is that? That's 390 or something. I mean, that's crazy to me that you're not going to have that. So it's a me now society. They want the self-gratification. They want to know they're going to be able to play. And it's different than any other position on the team. Because every other position on the team, other than maybe kicker, they know they can have another role.
So true what he says there at the end. You know, if you're an offensive tackle, you can slide over and play guard. You may give center a try. You know, there are multiple positions that are a fit for you. We see guys bounce around from both sides of the ball. We saw that with Chris Barnes before he ultimately decided to transfer. He was going to try defensive line for a moment. We saw Lamont Gilliard, I guess, move from defensive line over to the offense, and he finally found a home along the Georgia offensive line. The other positions sort of bounce around all the time, and sometimes it really works out to the tune of a successful playing career. But for the most part, quarterbacks are quarterbacks, and there's not really another position for them to go to there. And in what Kirby Smart says about Stetson Bennett, I find myself once again saying what I've said on this subject a couple times, that the word depth, when it's used by players, means something very different than when it's used by coaches. Stetson Bennett looks at the quarterback depth at Georgia and says, you know what, it's too much because there's a five-star in Justin Fields who just got here. There's a former very high recruit in Jake Fromm who's the incumbent starter. That's too much depth. But Kirby Smart looks at that same situation and says, you know what, these may both be elite guys. They're both potentially great starters, but there's just two of them. I need three to feel good about my quarterback situation. There's not enough depth. And that's a difference of opinion and a difference of viewpoint when it comes to this. It's just very difficult to reconcile. Players want to play where they can play. Coaches need insurance policies when somebody gets hurt. And right now, these two ships seem to be moving in the opposite direction. But I think the main point of bringing all of this up, and obviously, well, I think we'll all with curiosity look to see how this plays out over the course of the next couple of years with the Georgia quarterbacks that are on the roster, Jake Fromm, Justin Fields, and the ones that start to come in. We'll look with this with curiosity, but the one thing we will not see, though, is Kirby Smart, I think, be that impacted by it. No matter what happens here, I think that Kirby Smart is willing to let this play out. I think that Georgia fans ought to take a bit of a page from Smart's playbook here in terms of, we may be heading into an unknown territory. It's not often that teams have two quarterbacks of the potential that Fromm and Fields brings to the table, but Kirby Smart's not going to be too worried about the dire situation that could come if one guy's not getting enough playing time. And once again, Kirby Smart at the SEC spring meetings was pretty candid about that.
I don't think you play that into the decision. I mean, then you're being manipulated and dictated to, and you got to do what's best for your team, and you've also got to do what's best for each young man on your team for their development. And whatever that development is what you're trying to do. You've got to sell it to them. It's about the team, and you can't be just about you, even though there is a me generation and me society. And I think sometimes when you explain it to them, this is what's best for you, then you can help them understand why you're trying to do what you're doing.
So, I mean, for me, the bottom line on all that is that Kirby Smart, while he's heading into sort of an unusual situation with some very good quarterbacks and just lost Stetson Bennett, a guy that he would like to have kept, I don't think you hear a lot in the way of concern from Kirby Smart. This is an interesting situation, but not necessarily an obvious problem. As I've said before, I think there's a potential scenario here where this actually works out okay for Georgia, for Fromm, for Fields, and for everybody involved. And if it doesn't, it sounds like Kirby Smart's going to be okay with that too. The one thing that I think has made Kirby Smart's situation at Georgia different than, say, Alabama, where I believe that Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Hurts are eventually heading for a bit of a conflict, for a bit of a controversy is that Georgia's having a legitimate competition, and Kirby Smart's truly going to play the guy that deserves to be on the field the most. Last year at Alabama, I don't believe that was the case. We saw that for ourselves in the national championship game. Hurts is inferior as a quarterback to Tua Tagovailoa. Well, Kirby Smart's not going to start the inferior QB at UGA. It's going to be an honest, forthright quarterback competition. I think there's room for both Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, and it sounds like Kirby Smart's got the right mindset to approach what should be a very fun story to follow all season long. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza, and we're glad you're with us. All the different ways that you may be accessing our program on video, Dog Nation Facebook page, Dog Nation YouTube page, the Dog Nation Twitter feed. We are live there at 10 a.m. We're on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. By the way, special guests coming up from our friends at 960 The Ref later on in the program. We're also available podcast form wherever you can find podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Android devices. I post the show at the worldfamousdognation.com. You can listen straight through SoundCloud. We try to make Dog Nation Daily as easy to find as we can possibly make it, and it would not be possible that our friends from Marco's Pizza, who invite you to say hello to a delicious double play with Marco's Pizza. Get two medium, two topping pizzas from Marco's for an everyday price of $7.99 each. Order yours today from Marco's.com. I love Marco's Pizza. My family does, too, and it's a real honor to have them a part of what we do here each and every day on Dog Nation Daily. Okay, so later on in the show, as I mentioned, special guest coming up from our friends at Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, David Johnson, who does the morning show there, and is also one of the UGA baseball broadcasters, going to be with us. He's going to give us a preview of the big Diamond Dogs regional, NCAA regional, that begins Friday night. Georgia hosts Campbell, Troy, and Duke this weekend. They'll start their series with Campbell on Friday night. David will give us a preview of that and kind of an outlook the rest of the way here for a Diamond Dogs team that could be hosting a Super Regional and that could really have a chance to punch its ticket to the College World Series. David will tell us all about that coming up a little bit later on. We'll also send some well wishes out to the softball team, which also begins play in the College World Series tonight against Florida. We'd love to see the Dogs get off to a big start in the College World Series against the Florida Gators. So good stuff coming up with David Johnson a little bit later on. I am also going to welcome to the program in a minute one of our great colleagues, Mike Griffith, who's been on the scene for us covering the SEC spring meetings. A lot of the audio that you've heard this week, Mike has delivered that to us here, and he's also been on hand for some of the hot topics that have been debated there, and we're going to catch up with Mike on all of that here coming up. And before we do that, I actually want to let you hear a little bit more from Kirby Smart from the SEC spring meetings, audio that Mike was able to capture for us, because I wanted to do more on this. I think I'm going to end up sort of expanding this topic a bit tomorrow. If you watched SEC Country Live yesterday, we kind of played you some of that Nick Saban rant where he kind of goes off on the notion of the graduate transfer proposed rule change where guys would be allowed without any restriction to transfer within the conference upon completion of their undergraduate degree. You know, Saban kind of hides behind the SEC on this rule. At least that's the appearance that I think that he's giving off. I think ultimately he ends up being one of the few stumbling blocks, roadblocks to getting something like this done. I think it ends up being a bit of a bad look for Nick Saban. I think tomorrow on the show I may compare and contrast Kirby and Saban on this a bit more, because I think Saban comes across as sort of a curmudgeony old man here, where Kirby Smart, both in terms of the fact that I believe he's actually arguing the right side of this, but also I think that when Kirby Smart makes a case for a graduate transfer rule change, I think he also ends up, I think, just sort of painting the Georgia program in a positive light. It's the kind of thing that ends up being, I think, good for UGA recruiting, frankly, if you want me to be pragmatic about this. And the comparison with Alabama here, I think, ends up being a little bit ugly for the Crimson Tide and maybe fodder for negative recruiting. We'll get into that more later on the show, later on the week. For now, though, let me let you hear Kirby Smart laying out exactly why he thinks it is that, like the Maurice Smith situation for 2016, when he left Alabama and came to Georgia, Kirby thinks that should be the standard across the entire SEC. Here's his explanation.
I think everybody has their preferences. I think when you poll the SEC, who knows where to fall? We'll certainly find out here shortly. I think it's a lot of silence in the room last year when it's proposed, and now all of a sudden it's got maybe a little more steam. I certainly philosophically feel like if a person graduates from undergrad and they've done their graduation work and they choose to go somewhere else, now the football activists could say they're only doing that for football, but there's 560 student athletes at the University of Georgia, and there's tons of those same student athletes in other sports that they may actively be going to pursue a graduate degree. Most people get a graduate degree where they got undergrad or somewhere else, usually somewhere else. So if they're going to graduate school for that purpose somewhere else, then I don't see the issue with them once they graduate. They've done that. They have a year of eligibility remaining. If they want to do that, I think they should be able to do that.
I think what Kirby Smart's arguing there is good for the sport. I think it's good for players. That, therefore, I'm for it. But I will admit, as the host of Dog Nation Daily here, I also think that stance is potentially good for UGA recruiting, especially in comparison to the more hardline stance of Nick Saban, who ends up coming across, I believe, as a bit anti-player. We'll, as I said, get into that a bit more here. I was also going to do our Dog Day Q&A here at this moment. Let me push that back for right now. We're very busy today. A lot we're trying to take care of. So I'll push back the Dog Day Q&A. We've got a fun one we'll deal with a little bit later on. Instead, let me get a little bit more here from the SEC Spring Meetings. Mike Griffith has been on hand there the entire time, and he's good enough to be with us right now. So let's welcome him into Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. And, of course, he is a great friend and a great colleague. He is Mike Griffith. He's done great work for SEC Country, and that continues this week with the appearance down there in Destin, Florida for the SEC Spring Meetings. And, Mike, as you come on the air here, I'll say good morning to you. Thanks for being with us. And I know at the beginning of the week there was a little bit of a concern about the weather, the tropical storm Alberto moving through. How did they end up working out? Have you been able to stay dry, and has the weather been okay for the SEC folks down there in the Florida Gulf Coast?
Yeah, there was some travel complications for people that were coming from the east and the north, Brandon. A lot of people coming from the west didn't have any issue, and it's blown through here, and everything is fine. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of collateral damage, but you're right. There were a lot of concerns. You know, those tropical storms can turn into hurricanes very quickly, and this was one that everyone was keeping an eye on, the first named storm of the year. And you know, there were some, you know, dangers. You know, there were some people wondering if they should come down for this, but you know, I drove through it.
Yeah.
It was quite the storm, but I'll tell you what, it's been worth it. It's been pretty interesting to see Kirby Smart and Tom Crane, the hardest working guy down here. I mean, every time I turned around, he was talking to somebody pitching the program.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit earlier this week. Tom Crean is, I think, right now trying to bring a new energy to Georgia basketball, which is a really good thing to see. And I want to talk to you in a moment about something that I was just addressing before you came on the air, which is the debate over the grad transfer rule change and how kind of Kirby Smart might contrast to some of the other coaches in the league, Nick Saban in particular. But before we get to that, let me begin with Kirby Smart just in general here. And, you know, I watched the video that you posted of Kirby Smart and his press conference that he did down there, and for me, it's kind of interesting to watch the evolution of Smart occur here. Here's a guy that's moving into his third season, and, you know, listen, this was an accomplished defensive coordinator before he got the Georgia job, but he has gone from kind of being that rookie head coach, the way that Jeremy Pruitt will be at Tennessee this year, to really sort of feeling like one of the more seasoned guys in the league now, even though he's still relatively young. Obviously, a reigning SEC champions tag will do that for you. He's got some hardware to back up his credentials here. But is it interesting to you to also kind of watch how Kirby's evolved here, to kind of almost feeling like, I don't want to say elder statesman because he's not an old man, but he's certainly a lot more in that sort of seasoned camp now than he was back before 2016, is he not?
Well, Brandon, I'm stepping in on Kirby Smart right here, and you know, I didn't get to see that version of Kirby. You know, I was covering Tennessee, and so you know a lot more about the evolution. But I can just tell you, as a guy walking in from outside the room, I thought Kirby was the most poised and balanced coach here. I thought his presentation, if I'm a recruit, that's who I want to play for. You know, he was the guy that pointed out the hypocrisy in the transfer rule, wasn't rattled or shaken up at all by asked about the national championship game. To me, I was so impressed. I saw Kirby that night and talked to him, and I said, "Hey, man, your presentation was amazing." And he said, "Really?" I said, "Yeah, I mean, you know, they ask you about the national championship game. There's a lot of ways that conversation can go, Brandon." And he said, "Well, let me tell you something, guys. I was out recruiting 2 days later, and I'm not going to let that play beat me twice. And if I let that affect me, then that affects my recruiting, and they've beat me twice, and I'm not going to do that." I mean, Kirby's on to the next. His energy is positive, and he's clearly an advocate for students. Whereas I think Nick Saban has really lost big on this. I mean, you don't normally see Nick Saban on the wrong side of public sentiment, right? He's the guy we all think, you know, could be president one day. But Saban has really stepped in it, and he's a sore loser. He's not going down without a fight, even though it's very clear, Brandon, that I think this graduate transfer rule is going to be changed on Friday.
Yeah, I think it is, too. I mean, listen, what the SEC's shown you in the last couple of years is when the institutions want a rule change, they get that rule change. It happened for Florida last year with Malik Zaire. I think it's going to happen with the Van Jefferson thing, this year. And, this conversation, I think, kind of falls in that same lines. And that's one of the reasons why, and we talked about this yesterday in SEC Country Live, it's one of the reasons why I think Saban, and you just sort of, said this yourself, but I think Saban ends up kind of looking bad in this entire discussion about restricting graduate transfers. What happened to Maurice Smith in 2016? What happened with Brandon Kennedy here for 2018? Saying, oh, it's the SEC's rule, it's not my rule. And yet, I think most public opinion would say that, Saban's hiding behind an SEC rule to what appears to be restrict his players from leaving when they're not happy. And that seems like, very fertile soil for negative recruiting, if you don't mind me saying so.
Yeah, no question. And listen, any other thing he's doing is using hyperbole, saying, oh, we don't want free agency. Look, nobody's talking about free agency. Nobody's talking about every kid that's upset that he didn't start, being able to transfer without penalty within the league. This discussion has been about players who have graduated, players who are in good standing, who have taken care of their business and fulfilled their academic requirements to earn that graduation, to earn that, degree. It's not about anybody just being able to leave whenever they want, but Saban is misrepresenting it, to make a case. And Kirby has come out in favor of players transferring. Jeremy Pruitt has come out in favor of that. Scott Strickland at Florida, the athletic director there, has come out. I mean, Saban, he's outvoted on this. And it's clear he still doesn't want the rule changed. He even said that. He said he thinks Alabama will benefit from this. The scenario the underlying scenario is, well, if you make this legal, there could be guys who are in their fourth year at, Kentucky or Vanderbilt, some star that says, I want to win a ring, and I want to go to Alabama to do it. And he said that maybe Alabama could benefit the most from this, and he still doesn't like the rule. So, to me, it's not a good look for Saban. You don't often see him lose in public sentiment. I think it's been a great look for Kirby, though. Like you said, the established veteran, very comfortable, very at ease, and very popular with the media.
Let me change the subject here and talk about something else that has been sort of kicked around in Destin this week at the SEC spring meetings, and that's the notion of SEC Stadium selling alcohol. Now, there are some beer gardens in place, I guess, at some schools. There's been experimentation for some of the spring games and, things of that nature. But overall, it seems like the league is moving pretty slowly on this. Now, for the most part, I'm sort of, libertarian about this. I don't really care one way or another if they do it or not. But this is sort of a hot topic for some. And for the SEC, even though it would seem to increase the revenue, there is not this sort of overwhelming desire to make this a regular part of all stadiums on game days. In your opinion, what is this about?
Well, it is. It's about revenue. There's some schools that, would like that added revenue stream. But you're right. From a conference perspective, it's moving very slowly. There's not a fever pitch for it. Now, we know things can change, Brandon. A few years ago, this transfer rule, nobody would have said anybody should be able to transfer. And Greg Sankey yesterday, the tip to me is when he's up there saying, well, remember, I transferred twice. Okay, the commissioner just showed his hand. He didn't have to share that information that he transferred in college. But the fact that he did is evidence that he understands the plight of some of these kids. To your question on the alcohol, I don't see it happening in the SEC. I was covering the Big Ten a few years ago when it was a big item, and they ultimately let the schools decide individually if they wanted to do it. And really, that would be the next step. Right now, the SEC has a league-wide policy that you cannot sell alcohol in the common or the public areas. Now, as you said, in the premium seating, in the skyboxes, it's allowed there, but not in the public seating in the stadium. I don't see the SEC changing that rule anytime soon. I don't even see Sankey allowing the institutions to decide for themselves because, this is a brand matter. I think Greg Sankey looks at, they don't want to turn into the NFL. And in terms of some of the consequences and some of the things that happen, the type of environment at an NFL game, not quite the same as an SEC game in Knoxville or Athens or probably even Tuscaloosa for that matter.
Well, I travel, for a long time I was a ticket-buying fan myself, and even now I kind of go into the, main ticketing area a lot on Saturdays. And, the one thing I've said about this subject, Mike, is that even if, they waved a magic wand tomorrow and alcohol sales were just sort of like the new norm in the SEC, a lot of the corridors in these stadiums are so small around the concession stands, the lines that would form, you wouldn't be able to service that many people anyway. So it's kind of a weird thing. You've compared to the NFL, which I think is an interesting comparison. The average NFL stadium with its wide, vast corridors where there's plenty of room to line up at concession stands, that's very different than, you know, Sanford Stadium, which the main, you know, structure is about a century old here. Most of the SEC stadiums have you know some infrastructure in place that's about 100 years old or so. And a lot of those corridors inside there, they just don't really set themselves up particularly well for long beer lines, which would clearly try to form.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, you got to add to it, I mean, just the passion in the SEC, Brandon. I mean, we've heard the stories. We know how crazy it can get. And now you're going to add gambling, you know, legal gambling to the mix in some states. And can you, you know, play out the scenario in your mind of the guy that bets the house and the team loses and he's had one too many and, you know, he throws that cup of beer or he says those words and, you know, there's a family there, an alum, a Georgia alum with his family and his children. And, you know, you just play the scenario out and you go, you know, that's not, you know, what you want to see in the SEC. And I don't want to say that everybody that has a beer at a game is going to do that because, of course, that's not true. But the problem is it only takes a few and it's really hard to enforce. And, you know, you don't want to have to enforce it afterward. You know, well, they got people there to arrest them. Well, we shouldn't even see it happen. And there are, yes, I am aware that there is some alcohol consumption in parking lots and people find ways and 98% of the people don't abuse it. 98% of the people can handle it just fine. But that 2%, you know, create an issue that I don't think the SEC wants to deal with. And I think a lot of alums and people that bring their families would probably agree.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Mike. Let me change and talk a little bit here about something that both Nick Saban, Gus Malzahn got really upset about. For the most part, Kirby Smart sort of sidestepped this. He didn't really get into it too much. But this restriction on the number of headsets that can be in use on the sideline, limiting it to 20, which has been explained by some, is really a way to limit the impact that non-coaching personnel can have on a game. It's the paid analysts, the role that, like, say, Butch Jones fills at Tennessee, Jay Johnson fills at UGA. These kind of analysts who are brought in by a lot of SEC teams, this is thought to be sort of a way of cutting them off at the knees here. And, boy, a lot of SEC coaches, as I mentioned, Malzahn, Saban in particular here, they don't like this at all, do they?
Yeah, Kirby's probably already figured out a way around it. He's probably one step ahead of the curve on this one. But, no, they don't like it. You know, and Commissioner Sankey even said he didn't think that this rule made a lot of sense. I mean, there were bigger issues. As Nick Saban said, it's like worrying about mouse droppings when there's elephant doo-doo out there. He did clean it up and say those words. The camera was on. But it was a good analogy. Yeah, there's a lot bigger problems out there. You're probably right, Brandon. It probably is being done to kind of level the playing field a little bit. Now, I said this on Feinbaum's show yesterday. You know, Nick Saban reminds me a little bit of a NASCAR crew chief. You know, these guys are always operating outside the rules. You know, hey, there's some aluminum hubs. You don't got a rule against that. Well, we don't. Now we got to decide if we need to allow those. That's a Jeff Gordon Winston All-Star Race reference from the 1990s, by the way.
Classic.
But you're always looking to innovate. You're always looking to find things to make your program as good as you can. And the reason why Nick Saban is successful, not only is he ingenious in these ways, but he's got the resources. And that's where the NCAA's got to step back and say, well, now, wait a minute. Yes, this is innovative, and we certainly don't want to punish someone for being innovative. But at the same time, you do try to keep the playing field level. And, yeah, maybe Alabama can't afford 85 headsets and, you know, some jacked-up cell service. But, you know, what about Georgia State? You know, are they going to be able to do that? Or some of these other teams that Alabama schedules, you know, Charleston, Southern, and teams with these high school stadiums that find their way on Alabama's schedule each November, another ingenious thing, I might add. But I think that's why the NCAA is doing it, because they do want to keep the playing field as level as possible. Don't want to punish the innovation, but, you know, allow for things that everyone everyone is able to do.
Let me finish up with this, Mike. You've done a great job covering the SEC spring meetings all week here. What else should fans be aware of as just sort of a final wrap-up here of kind of what you've seen going on? You mentioned Tom Crean earlier and the work that he's been doing. What else has sort of stuck out in your mind about what you've seen this week from Destin, Florida?
Well, to me, just that dynamic. You know, that you mentioned the Kirby dynamic. I mean, it's always been the Nick Saban dynamic, but now it's the Kirby dynamic. I mean, yeah, Alabama could have, should have, you know, lost that football game. You know, Brandon, everybody knows it. What Kirby's done at Georgia, everybody is well aware. And, you know, Georgia, the narrative on Georgia has changed. It really has. I mean, the East isn't even being discussed. It isn't, oh, the East is terrible anymore. It isn't, oh, geez, which one, any one of these teams can win it. It's like, okay, who's going to, you know, who's going to be runner-up? And, you know, Georgia's just got a presence here now that's to me, very different league-wide. And I give credit to Crean for trying to cash in on that. I mean, you know, these basketball coaches all know what a tough sell it is, but, you know, he's been there 3 days. And he's, like I said, he's walking around, and I don't know if he's really going anywhere. He's just looking for people to talk. It reminds me a lot of Bruce Pearl, quite frankly. But so I think Crean, you know, and I've got a story coming out of what Bruce Pearl and Rick Barnes said about him. You heard John Calipari yesterday say that he thought Georgia was a top-three job. But I think Georgia's been a big story. I think Kirby Smart's a big story. I think people look at Georgia now, perhaps the next top dog. And you know, Kirby plays right along. I don't know how much you talked about it, but, you know, the whole thing with when will Nick Saban retire, and, you know, people recruiting, negative recruiting against Saban supposedly, and Kirby says, nah, he's probably going to coach forever. He's in great shape, you know, and not sounding like he's feeling very threatened by him at all. So the poker game goes on, and I think Kirby likes his hand.
Yeah, that's well said, Mike. I like your spin on what Kirby had to say there. Really good reporting this week, Mike, and it is a real thrill to have you here on Dog Nation Daily here today, presented by Marco's Pizza. We appreciate your time. We'll look forward to reading a whole bunch more from you, and we'll hope to catch up with you again here very soon in the near future.
Thanks for your coverage as well, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I like that description there from Mike Griffith. You know, this notion that when asked about Nick Saban, the idea of, you know, when he might retire, and, you know, the thought that might be for some negative recruiting grounds, he says, hey, he may coach forever. Mike says it makes it sound like Kirby's not the least bit worried about Nick Saban whatsoever. And I do think that's kind of an interesting spin on that. Good stuff there from Mike Griffith. He's not our only guest today, by the way, coming up here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Coming up in a few minutes, really in about 5 minutes, we'll talk to David Johnston, who is a Georgia baseball broadcaster for our friends over at Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep. He'll preview the big Diamond Dogs NCAA Regional. It starts Friday as the Dogs get ready to host the Camels of Campbell, along with Troy and Duke there in that NCAA Regional. Can I also do this before we get really rolling here with our SEC Through? Can I throw up the Dog Day Q&A question here on the screen? We're trying to cram a bunch into the show today. Like always, we've got way too much going on here. Some of this is going to happen off air, either on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily or on our comment section when it's over. But the Georgia-South Carolina game was announced yesterday as a 3:30 start time for CBS. I heard some negativity from some fans on Twitter about this, saying they like the night games more so than the afternoon games. For me, 3:30 is always going to be that perfect window, and I sort of treated this as great news when CBS announced it at 3:30. To me, that's just a kind of a cool cachet, the sort of the big spot there for the SEC, but some of you feel differently. Some of you like the earlier games because you like to get home. Some of you like the night games because you want the all-day tailgate. So weigh in on that as a part of our Dog Day Q&A. We'll do a lot more of that here, both online later on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily and in our comment section here for our YouTube friends, our Facebook friends, and for those of you hanging out on the Twitter feed there as well. For now, though, let's roll on with our SEC Through. Of course, SEC Country Live, 3 p.m. this afternoon on the SEC Country video channels. And you just heard Mike Griffith talking about the limitation rule on the headsets. Now, I'm amazed at how dumb I am sometimes. I mean, like, I go to all these games. I try my best to pay close attention. But for the life of me, I mean, am I the only one that feels this way? Would you have known there were 20 headsets on the field? I mean, if you'd asked me before, like, how many headsets were on the field, I don't know how many I would have said, but I wouldn't have thought there were already 20. But they want to cap it at 20, which means some of these programs want a whole lot more than that. I guess I'm just not paying close enough attention, I don't guess. And listen, you know, as I said, Kirby Smart wasn't that, like, bothered by this. You know, Malzahn made a big point to argue this. There were some quotes from him at AL.com about that. Nick Saban, you know, went off on his famous rant about that. That audio and video is all over the internet right now. Kirby Smart said, we're going to deal with the rule no matter what it is. I was actually somewhat surprised that Kirby, who does like his, you know, staff full of analysts, his non-coaching personnel, he likes those guys. He likes bringing them in. I was a little surprised he didn't make, you know, a bigger fuss about it, but apparently he chose to take a different tact on this. You know, my issue with this, and I know this seems very tedious and sort of the kind of thing that we only talk about on the last day of May. I do realize that. But my issue is where this rule comes from. it sort of comes from football programs below the stature of the SEC as a way of trying to keep their thumb on the SEC. I mean, I think there's just a day and age coming where the college football governance, the way that it's sort of put together now, it just can't coexist. 130 teams don't have the same agenda. There are big power programs. I'm thinking about like the top two-thirds of the SEC, the top two-thirds of the Big Ten, a couple from the ACC, really very little in the way of the Big 12 and I think the Pac-12. They sort of operate in an entirely different stratosphere at times. You almost wonder at some point in time if the major powers in the sport are just going to band together and make their own rules and kind of go about their business in their own way here, because I don't think that you can govern, you know, Middle Tennessee State and Georgia by the same rules, because they're not dealing with the same resources here. And ultimately, this sort of, you know, outrage by SEC coaches, the rules, you know, existence in any way, I think this sort of points to a future for college football where these various factions with their widely different financial resources, they just can't exist underneath the same umbrella, I don't believe. Along those same lines, Scott Strickland, the Florida athletic director, sort of criticized the SEC spring meetings, the optics of the rising assistant coaching salaries. This is another deal where, you know, a lot of programs in the sort of have-not category, which I wouldn't really consider Florida being that group, but a lot of coaches in the sort of have-not category just don't have the money to spend on big-time defensive coordinators, big-time offensive coordinators. But if you ask me, what's more worth the money? Is it a top-flight defensive coordinator or a top-flight athletic director, which is Scott Strickland's trying to be? For me, it's the assistant coaches who end up being worth the most money here. And from that standpoint, I think Scott Strickland's kind of off base with his criticism. We've got more SEC stories to get to, but for now, we're going to have to close up our SEC through. We'll do more of this later on when we can. As we said, it's a busy day here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. For now, I want to make some room and bring in our good buddy from our radio flagship in Athens, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Also a guy doing a great job on the Georgia baseball broadcast there on 960 The Ref. Dog's getting ready to go for a big NCAA regional this weekend. David Johnson, welcome back to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. How you doing today?
Brandon, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing really well, and I'm excited about the baseball team this weekend. I want to talk to you about a lot of that. I want you to kind of help us preview a bit of that. If you don't mind, let me bring you in on something, though, that I did briefly mention a little earlier in the show. Georgia-South Carolina slated for 3:30 on CBS. For me, that's the most exciting announcement you can get this time of year. That's my favorite game time for the Dogs to play. I have heard from a couple of people, though, on, you know, Twitter and various outlets like that, that they wish it was a night game. That's what they were hoping for. I mean, if you had your choice as both a, you know, a fan of the sport and a guy that's been covering these games for a long time, and like myself, a guy that's also getting a little older here, I mean, what do you prefer? The early afternoon game, the 3:30 slot, the night game? What's your preferred slot for these UGA games?
Oh, I'm 3:30 all the way. Those are the best times, because you get plenty of time to tailgate before. Then you've got the evening to whether you want to keep, post-gaming, or whether you want to watch the night games that come on after that. I know the businesses love it. It doesn't matter whether it's Athens or Columbia or, you know, whatever town. They get a lunch crowd. They get a dinner crowd. I mean, it works for everybody. But, yeah, far and away, I'm a 3:30 guy. And I love the late fall, or I guess you could even call it early winter games, where the game starts and, you know, it's still light outside. Yeah. By the time the game's over, it's dark. I mean, the 3:30 is just my favorite. So, yeah, I was very excited. Yeah. When I saw that the game was going to be at 3:30.
I love your description of all that. That gets me excited about the season right now. And there's also a lot of excitement building for this NCAA regional for the Diamond Dogs here this weekend. You're in Athens every day. That's where you live. I mean, is there a buzz in this town right now about a chance to host some NCAA tournament baseball there at Foley Field this weekend?
Big time. Big time. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody's excited. You know, and the Dogs have, not had the last few seasons haven't been great. So all of a sudden, to have the season they've had, not just have a good season, but all of a sudden get one of those top eight national seeds and be able to host. If Georgia wins this weekend, you know, they get to host again next weekend. So everybody is really, really excited about this. And I always tell people for the NCAAs, whether it's a regional, super regional, I mean, the intensity, it is fantastic. And we're going to have a ton of people here in Athens this weekend. Everybody's fired up about it. And I'm happy for the coaches, happy for the players. They've worked so hard. And it's great to see them get something out of this, and hopefully we'll be playing baseball for a few more weeks.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And Georgia does get that national seed after going 2-0 out in the SEC tournament. David, I don't know if you remember this, but you were on with us before Georgia went to Florida. Obviously, here on this show, we're Gator haters, and we were hoping to see, you know, Georgia go down there and take care of business against Florida. And you cautioned us and said, hey, Florida on the road's a tough bargain here, but if Georgia can take one of these games against Florida and then two of three against Arkansas to close out the regular season, they could be in pretty good shape. Well, as it turns out, that's exactly what happens. Georgia, you know, does win the series against Arkansas, got the game there against Florida, and ultimately, is that really what worked in Georgia's favor, getting those high-profile regular season wins? Is that what it took to overcome what was less than stellar of an SEC tournament for the Diamond Dogs?
Yeah, I think so, Brandon. I mean, like I said, if they had gone 3-3 in those two series, they were going to be in good shape, and that's exactly what ended up happening. If you remember, they lost the Friday and Saturday games to Florida, so they actually won three out of the last four against Florida and Arkansas. So they finished strong. The SEC tournament, to me, is just one of those where, you know, unless something crazy happens and like a team out of nowhere, which would have been LSU this year because they got to the championship and they weren't going to be hosting. But had they won the tournament, maybe it, I don't know. I just don't know. The SEC tournament, to me, I've seen Georgia teams in the past go 0-2 over there and still have a good run in the postseason in the NCAA. So it's kind of hard for me to put my finger on that one. But I wasn't too worried, even when Georgia went 0-2 last week, that they were going to drop out of the top eight just because of their overall resume this year, which was just really, really solid. Again, finishing the last 2 weeks going 3-3 against two of the top three or two of the top four teams in the country, including the number one team. I figured the Dogs were in pretty good shape. So, you know, they've done what they've done. And I've talked to people about this, too, that may not be – I know most people are, you know, definitely know mostly about the football team and know some about basketball, not as much about baseball. So this Georgia team's a lot of fun to watch. They don't do one thing great, but they do everything well, if that makes any sense. So you look at where they stack up in the conference, they're fourth or fifth in hitting, they're fourth or fifth in pitching, they're fourth or fifth in defense. They do everything really well. And if they play the kind of baseball this weekend and hopefully next week and beyond that, the way they played this season, they'll be in good shape. But, of course, the competition ramps up, too. Duke's got a very good team. Troy's got an interesting team. And, you know, you can't even go to sleep on a team like Campbell. If, you know, if a guy's pitching and he's on, then, you know, you got your work cut out for you. But that's how it is for anybody in any regional. It's not just Georgia, but that's what makes this time of year so much fun.
Yeah, and I guess I'll finish up with that right there. You just gave us a bit of a preview of the three teams here in this NCAA regional for Georgia, and then if it advances to the super regional, I guess it's most likely to face Texas Tech, who may have a bit of a chip on its shoulder given the fact that Georgia got the nod over the Red Raiders for the national seed there. I mean, what do you sort of look like as the outlook for the Dogs in the postseason? You mentioned sort of fourth or fifth in the SEC categories. Being fourth or fifth best in the SEC is actually a pretty nice compliment. So how will that compare here to the rest of the country and what a lot of Dog fans hope is a road towards Omaha?
Yeah, that's the thing. If Georgia does what they've done all year, they'll be in good shape. And, you know, you pitch well. You don't, you know, make errors, get the timely hits. I know this is baseball 101, but that's what, you know, your guys have to be, you know, you always talk about your guys have to be your guys. And if those guys step up, and you're going to be in very good shape. But again, but it's, baseball to me, I don't know what you think about baseball, especially like in the majors, it's the weirdest postseason.
Yeah.
Because you can have the best team all year long, and all of a sudden you get in a three-game series, and it's, you know, it's completely different. So Georgia has the pitching to be able to play four or five games in a weekend, which, you know, that could be the case this weekend. I don't know the other teams as well. I mean, I'm looking at their stats and their, you know, their rosters and that kind of thing. But, I know more about Georgia than I know the other teams. And they've got enough pitching to be able to, if they had to play on Monday, that they would be able to be okay in that situation. And then, you know, next week, if you do make it to a super regional, then it's just two out of three.
Right.
So it's not quite as taxing on your pitching staff. And then the teams that do make it to Omaha, you know, you play every other day. So it's not quite the regional, like the one coming up this weekend, it's the toughest one because you got more games in such a close amount of time. So if you've got enough pitching, which Georgia does have good pitching, good bullpen, got one of the hottest starters in the country, a lefty from Dunwoody, Kevin Smith, who's going to be in the draft coming up here next month. So they've got enough there. but just got to be able to put the pieces in place at the right time.
If you like the kind of dog talk we do here on Dog Nation Daily every single day, you can check out David's morning show there. Go to 960theref.com. Anywhere in the world, you can listen to them there from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern time, along with Sam Franco for the 960 The Ref morning show. And then Georgia baseball this weekend. It starts Friday, 7:30 p.m. Am I right about that, Friday, David?
You got it, 7:30 Friday.
So we'll check that out on 960 The Ref as well. David, thanks for being with us. We will look forward to speaking to you soon.
Hey, Brandon, thanks so much.
Good stuff there from David Johnston. Love our radio partners there in Athens, 960 The Ref. They're always a lot of fun. And I'm excited about the Diamond Dogs here this weekend. I am going on vacation, but I'm looking forward to following what they're doing there. And I'd love to see a big run into the postseason for them. Georgia baseball can be a lot of fun. I think a lot of UGA fans, both in Athens, who make their plans to go to Foley Field this weekend, also around the world where Dog Nation gets together. I think there's some excitement for this Georgia baseball team and for the softball team as well, which begins playing the College World Series tonight against Florida. And, well, you don't need to say anything else other than that. Dogs against the Gators. Obviously, we're excited about seeing the UGA softball team knock them off, and we'll look forward to watching that from Oklahoma City a little bit later on. And, of course, when we're thinking about Georgia, Florida, we're also thinking about the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We believe in a good Georgia fan as a Gator hater, and that's why we do the Gator Hater Countdown. 149 days from right now, Georgia beats Florida again. See you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.